This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Cut yourself some slack.
Thanks very much. Uncharacteristically kind, Claire. Okay.
Oh, right. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it.
That music before.
Sounds very familiar to me, Gillian.
Yeah, I wonder what it means.
I don't know.
Does it mean we are coming back on the radio?
Maybe. Should we?
I think we should.
Could we?
With a boost of truth.
Yes.
Tread carefully.
Yes. Phone calls with Mum.
Oh, very good. I think that's
it's
it.
It's a show.
Yeah, let's
We're
get
done.
On with it.
All right, let's do it.
G-Spot with Gillian and Claire. Wednesday breakfast on Joy.
Happy?
Oh, delirious.
Delirious.
Hi, I'm Warren.
And I'm Anastasia.
If you haven't heard, we're now Mondays, Thursdays and Fridays for breakfast on Joy.
History has been made in the UK by a Hindu and a Jewish woman who wed each other and was believed to be Britain's...
Wed
each other.
I was going to say, they wet themselves and then they wed
themselves. They wet themselves and then they wed themselves. Anastasia and Warren, Mondays, Thursdays and Fridays for breakfast on Joy.
And now available via podcast at joy.org.au, on iTunes or your favourite podcasting platform.
Joy 94.9, your voice, your radio station.
This is where your geek worlds collide, from tech, gadgets, sci-fi, horror, comics, and anything else that gets your geek motor running. I am Clayton Wimshurst. I have across from the desk with me Michael Strauss.
Good afternoon.
Next to me is Mark Towney.
Hello.
And we have two guests in this week. One is Ruby Susan.
Hey, guys.
Ruby, do you want to tell us your pronouns so we try and get them right?
Sure. She, her is all good for me.
Cool. And we have Bailey O'Neill.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
And your pronouns?
I like neutral they, them.
Okay. I'm pretty confident at some point I will mess that up, so just forgive me now.
I'm pretty
yes,
with my
sure.
pronouns, so...
You need, like, a spray bottle like the cats. Like,
yeah.
No!
That would be great. Yeah, I can handle that. Okay, so we're going to start off with a review of It, because that has come out in cinemas this week. I have seen it. Bailey has seen it. Michael's too afraid to see it.
I'm so afraid I'm going to panel under the table today, if you don't mind.
Mark's, I don't think, interested.
I'm not a big horror fan, so you know I'm giving this.
Ruby's gonna get Ruby's gonna get there down the track, but she hasn't seen. She has read the book.
I'm an obnoxious person. Yeah, I've read the book and I've seen the original.
Okay, the book's better. I can say that now. If you don't know It, or you're one of the three people on the planet who don't know what It is, it's a pretty.
So Mark, myself, yeah, who else?
It's a very iconic story, a horror story that centers around children that go missing initially, who go kind of creepily into that good night, and slowly their friends, siblings and whatever else are haunted by this message from a horrible clown.
Pennywise.
Yes. Can I stop this music? It's really scaring me.
No. You just go hide under the desk.
It sets the mood.
Mm. All right, so Bailey, what do you want to say about the movie to start off with, since you've seen it?
Frankly, I loved it. I don't know what to say. Like, the performances were incredible. Like, everything about it was really, really solid.
So
almost everything about it was really, really solid.
The special effects.
We had some grievances.
Yes, I have grievances, yes. But we'll get to those in a little bit.
Yeah.
So you like the special effects and the...
The special effects, I really did, actually. There were some janky ones, but I kind of felt like it worked. Kind of reminded me of that little bit in Fight Club where Tyler Durden just looks straight into the camera and breaks reality.
So breaking the fourth wall?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
But maybe that's just me wanting to, like, you know, like it a bit more.
Can I ask, as a bit of a noob to this, what's the general premise with the movie? Like, what's the general sort of storyline?
It's basically just kids experiencing fear in this form of this malevolent creature.
Well, so the original story is broken up, in the book, is broken up into two timelines. So you've got the first one is when these, basically this group of social outcasts in, who are about 12 years old kind of gather together to help fight this monster that they've all seen. That's come to them in different forms, which they just call it, because it's just a different kind of fear for all of them. And then, you know, that happens, they fight the evil, and then 27 years later, it starts to come back, and they all go back to their hometown to fight it again.
Right, right.
Yeah. So you can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah, and it's all just lined up perfectly for a sequel, apparently. Because I haven't seen this new film. So, but then I heard that it's only just the kids in this one.
Yeah.
Just the children.
I don't think this is particularly a spoiler, but it is purely just the children's part of the story, whereas the book is very much, and the original miniseries is very much overlapping the stories, and it's actually that their memories coming back that reminds us of what happened when they were younger.
Because in the future part, they've all forgotten each other and their hometown and, like, everything that happened. Because, and it's kind of not sure if they just suppressed it because it was horrific, or if it's part of the power of it.
Yes.
I'm trying to, like, put the capital in how I say it.
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 Have you read the book, Bailey?
No, I haven't. I'm actually not that up on literature.
Oh, cool. That's
right. Outside of comics.
In fairness, I listened to the book, so.
it's a pretty big book.
Yeah. Like, it's 43 hours in audiobook. Whoa. So.
There you go.
That's a lot. And it's was it done theatrically, as in, or was it deadpan
fully
reading?
Fully dramatised?
Yeah, it wasn't fully dramatised. I have, but this was actually, I think it was Stephen Weber who read it, which was a good choice. He's got a nice voice. But it did have so much more in it than I expected. I don't really want to go into detail. Those people who have read the book, that scene is not in the movie.
I just feel like, you know, you need to get more context.
I know, but I don't want to.
I know. Okay, so mildly kind of upsetting content is that in the children's storyline, when they've all gone down and they've all, there's only one girl in the group, and as a way to unify all the boys at one point, she has sex with all of them. Again, 12-year-olds. And It's a thing that happens. It's that thing, and I'm glad to hear it's not in the movie, because there's no way in hell they would be able to pull that off.
And I was quite happy for you to say it. I just didn't want to. So, but it's, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's...
I'm kind of stunned. I had no idea that was in the book at all.
Yeah, no, Bev's a tragic character in
the Australian
movie,
like, population is rapidly getting older.
Oh,
ignore me.
That was unexpected. What were you saying?
Bev's
a tragic character.
Well, you know, the character herself, like, explores a lot of themes of the cycle of being in abusive relationships. So she grows up with an abusive father. Again, the book came out in the 80s, so, like, spoiler alert, your own problem at this point. So, you know, in the future you find out she's in an abusive relationship, so her boyfriend's really abusive. And so, it's, you know, that kind of idea of cycles repeating. And so for me, it just kind of felt that the Stephen King was having a very vulnerable character doing something to tie people together. And it was, again, this idea that boys and girls can't just be friends and all this. The older I got, the more I was just like, why? Like, Stephen King does like to shock readers. Like, he does talk about the different levels of horror. Like, you know, there's creeping people out by getting them to imagine their own horror. And then there's just grossing them out by opening the door and pouring blood out of it. And I feel this was an attempt to kind of shock people. I just feel that it maybe wasn't, not really considering, again, just not really getting the social implications of what he was talking about in that particular instance.
There's, Beverly's character is the part that I had the most issue with in the movie. I try not to spoil too much, but they make a significant change from the book, which turns it into a very misogynistic piece. Not that it's not misogynistic to start with, but it really ramps up that misogynism.
Can you say that without it being spoilery, she loses a lot of agency that she had in the book?
Absolutely.
I think is the easiest way to put
that's
that.
That's a pretty accurate description of it without giving away what actually happens.
Yeah. So that was my major issue with it. The loss of some of the storyline, I think, needed to be in the movie from the story, but if I looked at it as a film that was not connected to the book, I would have said I really enjoyed it. If I look at it compared to the book, I'm like, I want some little bit more here.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I'm actually in the latter camp, because I never read the book, but I found the movie incredibly dense.
Oh, you should definitely read the book.
I'm kind of put off by the little scene that you described before, but I'll try to get through it.
It's only a few pages. You
it
can
does
just skip that bit.
Like
it
serve
nothing.
Like the smallest element to the story, but not enough to justify it. So,
I think it's one of those, like, looking back, and people do learn and grow as authors and everything. And I guess, like, I always think, you know, the iconic Paul Over from It has been the kind of the perversion of childhood clowns. I feel that that's actually been a legacy of the movie that's kind of continued. Even people who haven't seen the film now know clowns are creepy. Mm. And I think Tim Curry's had a lot to do with that, who played It in the miniseries.
And brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
Yeah.
Tim Curry playing Tim Curry. How can you not love it?
An interesting part of this is they've shifted it from the original, which is, I think, the 50s or 60s. Through to now it's in the late 80s, which is actually makes it from where the original miniseries was. It was set in 1990, and the children part of the story is now set in 1989. So there's definitely a major time shift.
And is that similar to the Stranger Things timeline?
Yeah, pretty close. Yeah.
I actually really liked the time shift, personally. It really modernised it.
Made it relatable.
Obviously with part two, it's really obvious where they're going to go. It's going to be set today.
Now-ish. So, interesting, there's not a lot of information about part two. They haven't even really put it out there that there's going to be a part two. It's not yet on Internet Movie Database that I can find, but it might be. We haven't had the great look, but it's hopefully.
I'm glad. I think they're kind of treating it like its own thing and just seeing how it goes.
Yeah.
Sort of. There's the very, very obvious chapter one at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, look, I'm going to tell people to go see it. I'm probably going to give it about 5 stars. Wrong scaling system. Sorry. I'm going to give it about 7 stars.
Out of 10.
Bailey?
I do a completely different system. I'm going to give it a B plus.
Oh, okay. Yep.
7 stars, B plus.
So, Bailey, tell us a film that you would give an A plus to.
An A plus rating for me?
Mm-hmm.
Aliens. But I take any opportunity I can to work aliens into any conversation I can, so that's not fair.
What would you give Alien?
The first one?
Yeah.
So, Aliens is an A plus. Mm-hmm. I would give Alien an A.
Okay. Fair enough. You haven't seen... What would you give the book?
It's one of my favourite of Stephen King's books, so I would definitely give the book. Again, I've got to pick a system. Can I just go off in a different tangent and go out of 5 or something? I don't know. I'd give the book an A. It's like, you know, obviously there are some issues with it because it is set like in old school and not just like it's old America. And there's particular things that are quite foreign still reading that. I don't, you know, again, and it's also about 30 years before even the thought of me existed, and that time can get a little catchy. And I'm really interested to see how they kind of bring into the future, because like I feel with technology, and Stephen King has a bit of a fear of technology, like he's written books about viruses that spread through cell phones and everything, so I'm interested to see if that's going to become a part of it. I'm going to go see the movie, definitely, because I did really enjoy the original one, though I did feel that some parts of the book, I remember reading it just being like, I don't know how they could make a movie out of this, because so much of the horror was mental, like it was the idea of inflicting horror and like this idea of entities larger than life, you know. Again, no spoilers, it's been out for 30 years, but no spoilers, but it was this idea of having this fear itself basically being this manifest existence with intelligence, and how that was described. I remember seeing the movie and being like, that's so corny, or that miniseries, like it was so cornily done, but how else were they going to try and explain something that was supposed to be beyond the human mind to comprehend?
Yeah, absolutely. And
I think they did really well in this movie, having the concept of fear being the enemy and not just Pennywise the clown.
And if you do have a fear of spiders, you're safe. So
for this one.
For this one, at least.
Don't know yet.
So I was talking to Dylan Adler out there, and his review was basically what? He wasn't a fan of it at all. He just had the one-word review. So thanks, Dylan, for that. I appreciate his in-depth reviews.
Thank you, Dylan.
We're going to come back shortly with The Handmaid's Tale. You're on Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
You're listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
I love this song. We are talking about Handmaid's Tale shortly, but first, Mark, what's coming up later in the show on the techie side of things?
Yeah, we do have a few tech items to come up with this week, because Apple has announced a new presentation that's going to be happening on Wednesday. We're going to take you through some of the rumours around Apple iPhone. And we've also got a few stories around operating systems, Microsoft not fixing things. I think there's a plane that needs to be
rebooted
or something for an update. I don't know. It's all later on in the show. But Handmaid's Tale. Handmaid's Tale. I just went all ochre for a moment there.
Handmaid's Tale. Yeah.
Yeah. What an interesting TV series.
Oh, definitely.
TV show.
And the music we've got playing through this review is all from Handmaid's Tale, the TV series. So it's a bit of a sweet, and the music was a really good big part of it for me.
Yeah. They used the music tracks in the credit sequence at the end of each episode really well. It was a track that tied very well into the theme of that particular episode, and it was a very dramatic kind of shift from where, like, particularly the first couple of episodes, you found that you were so sucked into the story, and then to essentially be blasted by this modern day track was actually quite an interesting sort of dramatic effect that I found.
So again, have read the book, haven't watched the new show. So Handmaid's Tale is the story of Gilead, which is the idea of a United States where they're basically a Puritan, like the American Puritan Christian group, kind of do a bit of a coup and
it's
impose
your typical dystopian future.
Yeah, future, but with a huge focus on women and reproduction.
Yes.
So yeah. So and I suppose to be fair, most dystopians do tend to kind of love to throw in that kind of the breeding aspect into it.
Mm. And it was written by what's the name?
Margaret
of the
Atwood.
Yeah, who is quite well known for her work in that
dystopian
sort of regard,
futures as well. Yeah.
This one was also written in the 80s.
Yes. Just before we go on, I did actually meant to say at the top of the hour, top of the review, this potentially contains some trigger warnings for people. So if you want to access, if you're experiencing distress, you can call Switchboard on 13114. That's actually Lifeline. Switchboard is 1800 184 527 between 3 and 12 every day.
Indeed.
So, basically, yeah, America has been taken over by Gilead Puritanian, and it's all based around the fact that reproduction rates have dropped so dramatically that everyone suddenly feels the need to control women because they need to control their reproductive organs.
Suddenly feels the need? Because, people are so chill, laid back about women.
Yeah. No, I accept that and I apologise.
But not everybody gets to be the controller, do they?
No.
Only some do.
And only some women can still have children, so there's there's a separation of classes that are colour-coded. So, and the handmaids wear red, and the idea is that they're women who are fertile, who are then given to men who are higher up, who have wives as well, who wear blue, but there's this weird ritual, which is honestly one of the most distressing scenes I've ever read in a book, which is one of the reasons
ceremony.
I haven't watched the TV series yet. A few reasons. Firstly, I heard SBS was not great on their ad timing, and a few very tense scenes are kind of sliced with ads. Not sure how to deal with that. Also, I feel like I'd need a lot of time and space and not have to, like, kind of go to work the next day and time to process it. So I'm leaving that one for the future when I'm feeling a little... And also, with everything I'm going on now, I just think I need to build up my mental fortitude.
And that's actually a really good point, because I went into it thinking that, it's just a TV show, whatever. But there are some aspects of it that are really, really concerning for me. Like, I think that we're actually not that too far away from these types of events happening. This, it's only a leap of faith of two or three, things that happen in the world that could create a situation where we're actually worried about what actually, causes these.
There's a reason it's gone back on the bestsellers list after Trump won the presidency in the US.
Yeah.
There's a reason why you see signs of protest saying The Handmaid's Tale was supposed to be fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And keep
it's
Margaret...
It's not a instructional manual.
Not an instruction manual. Keep Margaret Atwood fiction.
Yeah.
It's deeply distressing. In fact, a lot of... But it's interesting seeing how it's resonated now, because haven't seen the show, but there has been a lot of cases in the South and the United States with women wearing the red dresses and the kind of the Puritan cats to court cases in Texas particularly, where they have really cracked down on the access to abortion, and basically sitting there in the audiences when the politicians and senators are trying to impose more restrictions on abortion to kind of remind people, like, hey, you know what this reminds us of?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Gilead, thanks for that, guys. So it's resonating in a very dark way, and you're right, because it's right now it's reminding us that this is a very easy, this thing happens quickly.
And this was a book written in the 80s, was it?
1985.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's a funny thing about the TV show is, You can watch it and actually think, yes, it's very much present day, or just slightly towards the future of present day. The issues and the topics that it sort of looks at and analyses written back in 85, but still very relevant today, if not more relevant today. Like, there's a reason why this TV show was produced now, right? There was obviously an artistic sort of belief that it would make... be you know, a valuable story to tell.
And be topical. Does anybody know whether Margaret Atwood wrote this thinking that, yes, we were X number of steps away from this, or whether it was just
a
topic
she actually
that
she wrote a really interesting piece on the New York Times about it, basically about how it was written to show how it could happen.
Right.
Basically, if it happened in America, how religion is often used by totalitarian governments when they overthrow as a means to control population, and how the United States and their Puritan roots and the Puritanism, which is endemically anti-woman, endemically controlling, is still kind of simmering there. And if it happened to slip around, here's what a dictatorship would look like in the United States. So that was always the idea of it. I don't think she ever wanted to see it turn out so close to reality, though.
Sure. It's often said that she writes, speculative fiction?
She calls it speculative fiction.
Yeah, which is slightly different to, I guess, a science fiction or a kind of... It's actually based in some sort of belief of where we are today and where we could head, which is quite concerning.
Yeah, I read another book of hers, Oryx and Crake, recently, and it was another dystopian future whereby, again, some horrible thing befell the whole Earth, and mankind destroyed itself by introducing pathogens into the population, and how the population formed and coped with it and stuff like that. But it is so... three steps away from reality.
The pathogens in Oryx and Crake are very intentional as well. And that's the first part of a triple books. What's that called?
A series.
Bad Adam series. So the first one is Oryx and Crake. The second one is The Year of the Flood. And the third one is Mad Adam. So
Year of the Flood, like, that sounds pretty poignant too.
It's actually around a religious group. And if I actually, again, listened to that on audiobook, and it very much feeds into, the hymns are actually composed throughout it. So you actually hear the hymns played through, and she writes the hymns into the original book as well.
Yeah. Now, we've had a few texts in. You, of course, can SMS us while we're talking on the show today. 0427JOY949 is the number. Mark from St Kilda. Hello, Mark. it's a funny... This is one of the phrases that's used throughout the show, isn't it? Blessed be the fruit, which is such a sinister... Like, it's said in such a sinister way, right? It's, you know, blessed be the fruit. It's like a greeting, a standard greeting that they use with each other to like, you know, indicate, I guess,
the fact women are at that time reduced to wombs entirely. Yep.
Sure.
And that's what's blessed.
And that's also reflected by their names, because their names are of...
For the handmaids,
The name of their owner, so of Fred, of Bill, and things like that.
The response to blessed be the fruit is, and to many things, under his eye, which, again, is so sinister.
And they name the guards angels, so the angels are watching you, where it's men with machine guns.
That's one of the things that doesn't translate into the series, though.
Okay, so. I've heard Margaret was very happy with the series, which is always good. Also...
She definitely co-wrote it. So.
Yeah, which is good. You definitely want to have that on board, I reckon. Mm. I've heard the performances were all amazing, so it is definitely something, like, I think, to watch, though it is something to not go into with a, you know, it's not for the faint-hearted, I would argue, especially.
Definitely not.
And I think what the book has done, and I hope the series has done well, is just also show how much that while these systems seem to be aimed at controlling women, how much damage they do to men as well. Mm-hmm. Like, the men in there are not happy either. No one is happy.
Yeah. You think of the driver, Nick. That's his name. He doesn't seem particularly happy.
So he's the driver of the man who the handmaid is...
Yes, Fred.
Fred. The commander. So, Fred, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, so... And I guess there's a lot of turmoil, and you kind of wonder during the series whether he's a goodie or a baddie in a sense, but it turns out that he's quite
likeable. Okay, cool.
Character. not going to...
I thought you were going to give us the...
But yeah, it's he's also reasonably good looking as a cast character as well, but that's just my that might have some effect. I don't know, but
it obviously doesn't, Mark.
he's obviously a male in the story that is torn by the situation that he's in as well, which is like, you know, it's not all
not all the men get wives.
No.
Yes. Yeah.
And certainly only the high-powered ones get fertile handmaids.
And what's interesting, of course, is that, in this, again, in the book, I mentioned in the show, male sterility is not mentioned. The issue is always the woman.
That is explored in the TV series. Yes. So they actually do come into that. We've also had a message in from Kim who said, watch the movie with Faye Dunaway, which it was...
I've heard about... Look,
mediocre, but
I
had
remember reading the description. It was like, you know, like, and it was... had her in, like, a red nightdress, and the blurb was, like, you know, the, like, the secret, like, you know, the hidden, like, lusts. And I was just like, no, that's exactly the opposite of what this is supposed to be about. Mm-hmm. But I have heard the scene of the stoning scene is really, really well done in the film.
What I found interesting about the series is they've gone so much outside the scope of the book.
Yeah.
There's so much that was just not in the book, but for the most part is incredibly effective. It adds to story, which is rare for additional content to add to a story. The only change I didn't like was Serena Joy's backstory, which I won't go into now, but in the book she's essentially a religious figure who is famous on television before the...
She was a singer.
Yes, and yeah. She preaches about women's places in the home and that sort of thing. And then in the time before, as the book calls it. And then in this, she has a different backstory, which I don't like as much. But
yeah, I found that one of the... I'm up to around episode 6 of the series, and this particular episode did this dive into... Like, there's a lot of flashbacks throughout the whole show to the previous life. Is that what they refer to it as? Previous?
Yes, the time before.
The time before. And a lot of those are of the perspective of Offred and of her husband at the time. And that's great, but it suddenly added a little bit more depth for me when they started doing flashbacks of the of the wife and the commander as well.
Serena and Fred.
Yes.
Mm. So Serena's played by Yvonne Nostrovsky, which
is Australian. And from
Mass Effect. Miranda. Yeah. Yes. Also, people might recognise Alexis Bedell, who plays Off Glenn, who's comes a friend who is Gilmore Girls, Rory from Gilmore Girls.
Ah.
And Elizabeth Moss, who plays Off Red, of course, from Mad Men, Peggy.
Yep. And one of my favourites, Samira Wiley,
yes.
Who from Orange is the New Black, and who is amazing in Orange is the New Black, and is really amazing in this. Just seen the final episode, and that was her steal-away episode. So
it's interesting because... Obviously, in the book, they talk about race and that the children of Ham, which was something that in the United States, Christianity was used to explain how black people were slaves because they were children of Ham and they were dark because of sin. Because Christianity's, you know, people warp religion. Again, this is what the book is about. People warp religion to explain the controls they put on people. So I'm interested to see how they do look at that, given that in the book it's never mentioned that her friend is a woman of colour.
Yes, and also most women of colour in the book are Marthas, which are the servant class. And so in that doesn't carry through into the TV series in the same way. So, yeah. So if you want to catch The Handmaid's Tale, you can catch it on SBS On Demand. Is the easiest place to get to it. It is definitely worth your time, but definitely have whatever you need there to get you through it.
Watch it with a friend.
Yeah.
I suggest. No, yes. This is not one to sit by yourself on the computer.
Definitely. No. Which is actually how I watched it, but still. again, if you need some additional help, then please call Lifeline or Switchboard.
Yep. The Lifeline's number is 131114, and Switchboard is 1-800-184-527. Switchboard is available between... What time is it?
3 and 11 or midnight?
Midnight, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. Three to midnight. And actually, we didn't actually get to the whole... queer element of the series because it is actually extended, but we'll have to do that another time because we're out of time.
I was going to ask you about that. See, we can geek out about serious stuff too.
Yeah, absolutely. You are on Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
Buy it, use it, break it, fix it, trash it, change it, mail, upgrade it, charge it, point it, zoom it, press it, snap it, work it, quick erase it, write it, cut it, piece it, save it, load it, track it, quick rewrite it, plug it, play it, burn it, rip it, drag and drop it, zip, unzip it, lock it, fill it, call it, find it, do it, buy it, jam it, lock it, surf it, scroll it, pause it, click it, cross it, back it, switch it, fade it, name it, read it, tune it, print it, scan it, send it, fax, rename it, touch it, print it, play it, touch it, break the logic. One more time.
Now, you are listening to Geeks Out here on TechnoCade.
Yeah, no. Last week I did stand up straight.
Yeah. So, It's just the music. That track, of course, is Pentatonix that we've got playing underneath us right now. And it is a throwback to previous incarnations.
To the old days.
Technologic is the name of the track. And Pentatonix are one of my favourite groups. They're obviously an a cappella group. Everything you hear is made from their voices.
They do really, really good work.
Mm. So this is Geeks Out here on Joy 94.9.
Hey, at least we've got the station right.
Yes, I'm pretty sure I'm in the right radio station. Indeed.
so it's techno straight.
We have... we've talked about a couple of TV shows and movies at the start of the show, but what we'd also like to talk about this week is some technology news that's occurred, because we do like to feed that side of the geeks spectrum.
We do indeed.
Feed? We like all the geek spectrum.
and this one that came up, so we'll also in just a few moments discuss an artificial intelligence algorithm that can actually determine from a photograph sexuality with a certain percentage of accuracy. Kind of scary.
Finger thing where people can say, if you hold up your hand, they can see like, which finger is taller.
Something like that, yeah. We will talk about that in a few moments. But first up, there's a news item that came up during the week talking about Microsoft's lack of desire to fix a kernel flaw. What is a kernel flaw?
That's supposed to be my question. Come on. That's my flaw? One job during the tech thing.
Okay, well, you know popcorn and how they've got kernels?
Yes.
Nothing to do with that.
Okay, great.
So what the kernel flaw is, there's a piece of code that runs inside Windows, and
it's quite fundamental to the operating system.
Yeah, that's right.
As well.
And it's so fundamental, in fact, that it's been around since Windows 2000 days.
Mm.
So it's fairly, what we call fairly low down, because everything else uses it. And Microsoft are saying, well, no, it's not a flaw. Even though, if you write some correct code, you can effectively fool antivirus scanners.
Yes. Yeah, so apparently the code is there to assist antivirus software to determine if your computer is infected or not. I wonder, though, if this particular flaw, if it's countered by a lot of the new security mechanisms that's been put in place since the Windows 2000 days.
Well,
right?
I don't know, because it was discovered by a security researcher, and Microsoft's response to it was, our engineers reviewed the information, determined this does not pose a security threat, and we don't plan to address it with a security update. So you would have thought that if there was some counteractive element in there, they would have mentioned that. I think what they're saying is, you know what, it's been around for so long, nobody's discovered it, so...
I think they were saying, what's going to keep the shareholders happy? Don't worry, guys, everything's fine.
Well, the funny thing is, in the IT industry, it's quite often you can say that, but, you know, if an attack occurs based on this vulnerability now, there'll be a lot of press about it. There'll be a lot of... there's even, you know, been legal concerns around that, because the liability of, say, an operating system maker like Microsoft, and whether they should... respond to such a notice. Yeah.
And usually what happens is, when somebody ethically discovers a flaw and they then advise the manufacturer to say, look, we've got a flaw, the manufacturer fixes it, and then they make the announcement. Mm. So this time they've made the announcement because Microsoft said, no, we're not going to fix it. So that's going to put a lot of pressure on Microsoft, I think, moving forward.
Mm. I would imagine, just based on the PR cycles that go around, particularly with fear on hacks, like there was another big one with Equifax recently.
Mm.
It actually came out that the shareholders had, some of the CEOs had dumped their shares before it was announced.
Mm.
So I do think that just the general zeitgeist right now with hacking is, if there's even a chance something can happen, don't tell us it's all fine. Make sure, like, double check, build it up. So I'd imagine that we probably might hear some action coming out of this soon. Mm. I don't know.
Mm. Yeah. Now, software is the only... isn't the only thing to be hacked. But software is used in many, many different places, and one of them is within automobile technology and cars. And,
yes. Especially with new inroads into automated...
Yeah, self-driving cars.
Yep.
And so you would think that self-driving cars are more prone to be hacked than non-self-driving cars. But according to one researcher, the answer is no.
Hmm.
Which is counterintuitive.
Yes.
What happens if a car that someone is driving is hacked? So,
there's it's not a show. It's not an exhibition. What's DEFCON? How would you define DEFCON?
It's
an event.
An event.
It's an annual. It's a security event in the US where people on purpose try to hack into different things. And a couple of years ago, they hacked into a Jeep. And they were able to remotely control the steering of the car and to control the brakes, whether they worked or didn't work.
I think I've seen that movie.
Yeah.
and
that's terrifying.
And this is the thing. It's actually not very well defined what can and can't be done until the vulnerability is found.
Yeah.
So there's, you know, these hackers are, what they do is just, with their knowledge of the underlying systems, try to pick ways that might have been overlooked by the original manufacturer around and look for the vulnerabilities that way. So it's actually not very, you know, obvious from the outset what is possible and what's not.
It sounds like a public service, though. Like, actually checking, let's just check how this actually can be hacked.
Well, it is a public service if you do it with the intention of saying to the manufacturer, hey, we've discovered this, can you please fix it?
Yep.
It's not if the intention is, well, I'm going to, you know,
use this to my...
drive someone off the road. Yeah. Not really. It depends on who's driving the car.
Yeah,
it's public service.
in security, well, in the security circles, that's sort of referred to as white hat hackers versus black hat.
Yes, the good guys versus the bad.
Yeah. Now, and indeed, like even banks and so forth have whole departments that are people employed just to find the vulnerabilities and look at it from that perspective and attack.
Mm.
And,
so it's kind of like anonymous versus 4chan situation.
Yeah.
Now, Mark, you said that the way that these things are discovered is basically people look into the systems and see what's happening and try to find a vulnerability.
Mm.
Part of the reason why they're saying that self-driving cars are less likely to be hacked is that today, the systems are very, very simple.
Yes.
In the future, they're going to be much, much more complex because there's going to be many, many different sensors.
Mm.
So, one, it's you're going to have to look at a lot of more sensors and a lot more input to try and hack, which we call security by obscurity. Just because you don't know about it doesn't mean you can't hack it.
Yep.
But also, there's another element whereby it's not one sensor that the car relies on. It might be a number of sensors together to make a decision. So, you have to then really affect multiple sensors at once.
Yeah, and the nature of the, particularly for automated driving and self-driving cars, is that they need to interact with the external world to determine how to automatically drive, right? So, any of those capabilities could be used in a nefarious manner to get around the security of it all. For example, like if you had a radar system that was determining what's in front of the car to see, should it stop or not, if there was some way to interrupt that radar system and to actually tell it, there is someone, right in front of you right now, or not, if the case may be, that could cause the car to drive in a manner that's not expected. And that's I think, the biggest concern. I think it, particularly now with automated driving as well, or self-driving cars, a lot of the systems are built into the car. So they are looking externally. They are, they're sort of observing the environment around them, but there's nothing more than that they're doing. They're not connected to the internet, for example, to have any sort of network of information of data around them.
Yet.
this is a thing. Maybe that's where the industry is going, and that will actually create a lot more vectors for security to be vulnerable for the security mechanisms.
You don't need the internet because today cars have got tires that self-sense whether the pressure is going down or not, and they do that wirelessly.
Right.
So if you can hack into that wireless communication by driving close to a car with this technology,
yes,
you don't need to be on the internet.
But we put the internet on everything. Didn't people try to make a juice maker that was connected to the internet recently?
Well, it's the Internet of Things, isn't it? That is exactly the sort of the industry where it's headed, is Internet of Things, everything being connected.
Ruby, don't you want your juice maker to tell you when your partner has finished making their orange juice for you?
Don't I want to make huge, don't I want to buy plastic packets of vegetables that you can crush by hand? Or I could spend $400 to get an internet juice maker. Ah, Silicon Valley. What will they think of next?
Yeah. Definitely the be able to connect your car to the internet if it's self-driving so I can look at the traffic updates and see what's happening ahead of it. They definitely have advantages, but if also someone's going to hack in and drive you off the cliff, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Now, automotive industry is changing a little bit. So at the most recent DEF CON, Mazda supplied a Mazda 2 and said, guys, go hack.
Right.
So they went through, and I think we really need to make cars safe. We really need this crowdsourcing to say, hey, go hack it before you actually release a vehicle.
And we already see, road fatalities are already like pretty, it's a pretty common cause of death. Yeah. You know, you would want to keep that down. Though I'm a bit curious with automated cars, because all the feedback I've been hearing is that the biggest cause of accidents is the not people who are still driving without following the road rules. So yeah. Do you think that we'd have to move towards total automation for it to actually work?
The systems that are being built today, purely by their nature, they are built into the cars to observe the external, you know, environment to the car and respond to that directly. And that's purely because of the world that they need to be introduced to is a world that has other drivers around them, right?
Yeah.
So it's an interesting sort of... like if you looked at a timeline of, say, 100 years from now, if everything was automated, a lot of the systems that are being built today to handle that, to do that, may not need to exist, because it will entirely be automated and we'll probably have some other, like we'll probably be hurtling through tubes under the ground if Elon Musk has his way. It won't necessarily be cars. So, you know, I think there's an element of the advancement of this technology that is to allow us to move incrementally, you know, from where we are today to the next.
You mentioned AIs as well. Do you think we're going to get automated cars with artificial intelligence? Because that could be kind of cool. Like, was it Midnight Driver? What was the TV show where the guy was driving a car that he could talk to? Because I want that.
Knight Rider.
That's the one.
You could argue.
Hey, both of them were kind of right.
You could argue that exists today. Siri is a, or even Google.
But she's Google's everybody's friend. I want my friend.
It is a possibility today. It's just not in exactly the way that is presented in artistic circles.
I'm pretty confident that self-driving cars are going to be a lot less scary than my brother's driving.
Well, okay, so this is another point I want to make. And a couple of months ago, I heard Saturday Magazine refer to automated driving and how it's never going to happen. And I think it will happen.
Would that have been Macca?
Yes. bless him.
Yeah, I just agree back on that one too.
So, but I guess the one thing that is a good thing, like you hear about the stories from... self-driving cars, the scariest problem is that they could cause a fatality, right? Today, and you alluded to this earlier, tens of thousands of people die on the road in a year, worldwide, probably more than that.
I'd say tens of thousands per day. Well, at least probably 1,000 per day if you look at the...
We don't have the actual numbers. But the point is that this happens today anyway with non-self-driving cars, with human-driven cars. So if we're to compare the two numbers, what would the numbers be if we're fully automated or not? It's going to happen. You know, people are going to be injured by these cars as well. It's an unfortunate fact, but that's because of the nature of, you know, what we're doing. We're hurtling aluminium and steel down a bitumen road, and there are all sorts of things around it that could cause accidents.
So it depends if the software is at fault for causing the accident rather than the environment.
Or
human error. Yeah, but the difference is, if you are involved in an accident, it is human error. It is one person against one person. Mm. Or, sorry, it's the injured parties against the one person that caused it. If it is software that's doing it, it's different, because then we have a class action suit where everybody who's driving that particular car with that software will sue the manufacturer of the software.
Yeah.
Addressed in Fight Club too. You know, the idea of if there's an issue with the car, they see if the total amount of recall paid is going to be more than the amount of money they'd pay for the complainant.
Do you know the sad story with that is? I think it was the Ford Pinto, as a model of Ford, where Ford realised that they had exploding petrol cans and tanks. And they worked out that it's cheaper for them to not fix the car and to pay out the victims.
As you were saying, cars are already huge death traps. So, like, you know, we have to accept that fatalities are just a part of driving.
Mm. Yep.
That's awful. Sorry.
It is.
We don't want to make it worse with software, though.
No.
It's always that juxtaposition of, you know, convenience and you know, making our lives easier by not having to drive ourselves, which is essentially what, you know, self-driving cars are all about, what's driving them to create these things, and you know, how we feel about that today.
We've got definitely overexcited with this topic, so we're going to need to go for a break, and we'll be back shortly on Geeks Out on Joy.
This is Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
That's right. Clayton, Mark, Michael,
Ruby, Bailey.
We're all in the studio here, we're talking about artificial intelligence and self-driving cars and the march to our lives being more and more controlled by technology. This is an article that came up during just yesterday on The Guardian's website, which talked about a computer algorithm that can accurately distinguish between gay and straight women 74% of the time, and gay and straight men 81% of the time.
I have some questions about that. being a bisexual lady myself,
yes,
I want to know where we fall into that little category. So what about the non-monosexual?
You just get erased.
Yeah. Oh, so the cat just goes over. It's like, I see three people. It's like, I'm right here. Nope, does not compute.
Yeah, so this is a study that was done by Stanford University on these specific questions. So gay, straight, for males and females. It didn't, as far as I know, it didn't go into any further than that. But I'm only going off what's been reported through The Guardian as well. Yeah. So haven't looked at the original study material. It may well be covered by that. I'm actually not sure.
I just like to think we're too complex for computers. That's what I'm going to go with.
Well, this is the thing. So it's actually coming. It's trying to make a more simplistic way to determine things around us. And
I would like us to be able to determine that rather than somebody saying you are because.
I know. Okay, we've been talking about The Handmaid's Tale earlier in the show. Mm. I can instantly think of a lot of applications of this technology that would equal disaster for us.
And so I'll just go through what it found first up.
There are a lot of
ethical questions that come out of it. So this algorithm was used facial recognition techniques to analyse 35,000 images that were publicly available from the US, from a dating site based in the US. And from the images they analysed, some key features were identified of gay men and gay women. For example, gay men tended to have narrower jaws, and they also had longer noses and larger foreheads than straight men.
I'd like to wind back to the early 1930s and 40s and see what was coming out of Germany along those lines in identifying people by their race and religion.
I want to wind even further back to like the 1900s, where they thought they knew what a street robber looked like based on the line of his forehead. Like, was it chromology? What was that? Where you could like tell how sick a person was by their skull shape?
Yeah, I can't remember. So this is based on the information from the dating website. So obviously the people self-published the fact that they were identifying as gay or straight, and using the photos connected to those profiles as well. So,
That was how they taught the algorithm to recognise.
Indeed, right. Yes. Okay. Yes. And these findings weren't absolutely 100% accurate either, right? So, for the study actually compared the computer algorithm, which, as I said before, 74% accuracy on whether they identified as gay or straight. For women and 81% for men. When they put the same photos in front of people and asked them to determine or to make a judgment of whether they thought the person was gay or straight, it would come back 61% of the time accurate for men and 54% of the time for the human people to make that.
Were these people gay or straight?
Yeah.
Because I wonder if that
helps. Were they bi?
Yeah.
Pan?
Yeah. That's, yeah.
Did it talk about the purpose of this study?
This particular article from The Guardian did refer to the ethical questions as well, and I think these are very important ones, which we've all kind of
topped up right now. What was the aim of the study? Like, what did they see the application for this? What did the study themselves profess the application for this to be?
I think a lot of work in the artificial intelligence industry and there's a lot of sort of trying it out to see what would happen. And
again, like, I just feel that was done without any idea of, like, you know, could you imagine this kind of thing being used in Chechnya, for example?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So spouses could use the technology on partners they suspect are closeted, and that would be a bad thing, for example. Oppressive governments could use the technology to target populations. The fact that the study has been published shows that the capability of AI is itself questionable, knowing it's possible, regardless of how closely held the algorithms are to the study. even just shows that this is possible to be done, and it gives governments ideas on, yeah. You know, it's particularly oppressive
burn
ones.
It to the ground.
And referencing like previous topics we talked about, a fictional Gilead could use this exact technology in exact way. Like they,
now Handmaid's glad it can't tell bisexuals. I'm gonna be.
There's certainly gender criminals in Gilead who, when they use the software, would definitely go, oh, okay, that gender criminal. But that's a fertile gender criminal, so we're going to keep that one.
Mm. Scary.
Nah, I'm good.
Yeah. Now, is the next iPhone going to be as scary as this?
No, so the most anticipated news of the mobile world has been confirmed a week ago. Apple's invitation to people in the media to attend a briefing on its new product releases will happen. The briefing will be on September 12, which is this Tuesday, US time.
Yes, so Wednesday our time.
Wednesday early morning our time, and I do find I often wake up for those.
Do you now? I'm so surprised.
Indeed. So
at least with Nintendo, you just got to stay up a bit later.
Yeah. Time zones are more
a bit more
kind.
Friendly.
Yeah. Ruby, sad. Sorry.
That's sad.
So this briefing will take place in the brand new Steve Jobs Theatre in Cupertino, which is the theatre built on the new Apple campus. Apple employees are now moving into that new rounded UFO-style campus building.
24 hours? Or
sorry?
Like, are they moving in for, like, where they live or where they work?
They're all getting their tracker chips implanted. Yeah.
I believe they're encouraged to work very long hours with the amenity of the building, yes.
Okay.
They don't have a union.
It's the way that technology companies generally work. So the design of that building or that campus was one of the last projects worked on by the late Steve Jobs, of course, before his passing in October 2011. Now, there's additional sentimental significance to this year's iPhone release, which is speculated will be a big part of September 12's media talk. And we are now 10 years since the very first iPhone was announced. And there are many rumours, of course, swirling around about the features and developments in this year's design that suggest Apple is putting an extra effort into to breathe new life into the product. Some of those, there's going to be an edge-to-edge display. I think you mentioned some of these last week.
We did talk about the bevel.
Samsung's doing
the devil.
The bevel?
The bevel.
Is it the bevel?
The bevel.
What I'm most excited about is I've heard they're looking into developing shatterproof glass, which would just change iPhones forever.
Well, it's a
why
funny
would they want to do that?
The story of the story of glass in phone development is the original iPhone was Gorilla Glass, so it wasn't just your standard glass. So they are always doing things to try and make it stronger. I'm not sure that they'll ever be able to make it shatterless. It's just
they won't be able to, or they don't want to.
Well, no, I think that people won't mind if it's shatterproof or not because they'll just release a new one in 2 years and you'll need that. So I think, they're actually kind of getting rid of themselves this idea of the technology itself doesn't need to fade. They just need to make it better and better each time.
Mm. Yes. There's going to be faster processors. Possibly wireless charging is one of the factors of that because they want to make it an entirely enclosed system.
Yeah, and that means that you've got, like, the headphone jack is going to be different. Like, you can't charge it while listening to music and stuff.
Well, that's already an issue.
With the current iPhone. Yeah. But wireless charging would be really good if they introduced that.
Why?
Because it's so much convenient. You just put your phone down and it charges. You don't have to actually put it on top, plug it in and stuff like that.
You have to buy something else to charge it then? Like one of those, is it like going to be like a pad or just like a signal?
You have to buy lots of other things with iPhones. You have to have so many dongles and cables and adapters and everything else.
This is the status. It's okay, guys. Commercialism. Buy until we die.
All right, Mark, what's your favourite possible iPhone update?
I like the idea of it of there not being a home button. And replacing that with possibly facial recognition. hopefully with certain algorithms not built in, I would assume.
I don't want Siri judging my sexuality, thank you.
It already does.
But it's an interesting one because fingerprint scanning is used for a lot of the security mechanisms in the phone today, and a lot of apps rely on that today, particularly banking apps. So if they replace it with facial recognition, is it going to be a seamless transition, or are we going to have to go through a whole new round of app development just for that? Mm. You're listening to Geeks Out on Joy 94.9. We'll be back shortly.
This is Geeks Out on Joy 94.9. We are nearly at the top of the hour. And it's been a passionate hour. We've got it's quite a bit of passion
good
happening.
Hour. It's been a bit rough.
So, anybody else got anything to wrap up before we go?
I do.
Yes?
We seem to have... I seem to have this thing about aeroplanes and software updates. Well, the F-35 fighter is going to get software updates the same way that smartphones do.
What's that?
What? Forcibly restarted.
I think so.
Mid-flight.
Months until you do it.
Yeah. There's a US Navy Admiral Matt Winter who said, envision a little window that pops up that says, your latest software update is ready for download, yes and no, and that's how they're going to update the F-35 fighters.
I really wouldn't do that mid-flight, because if there's a conflict between the update and whatever you got on your system, then you're going to start heading to the ground.
Is there a, like, remind me tomorrow button? I think that's the important aspect to that one.
What if it comes up immediately before you go to war?
Well, yes, that could be a problem.
And the update might be required for a certain function of that war.
I can imagine that happening.
The gay screening in. We're ready to go.
And will that update make it more hackable?
Probably.
I like this nice little showcase of the last half hour of the show.
So, if you have an F-35, make sure you say yes at the appropriate time.
Indeed. Oh, yes.
Ruby and Bailey, thank you so much for joining us this week.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you so much.
I hope to have you back at another point. Mark, Michael, thank you as always.
Thank you.
And we will be back next week. This has been Geeks Out on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9 in Melbourne, joy.org.au for the world.
Melbourne's most uplifting music mix for your weekdays.
Your voice, always. Joy 94.9.
Joy News.
You can find more Joycast and show blogs. Go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.